Today we revisit practice valuation. Is your worth determined simply by adding up physical assets and existing patients, or are there less traditional assets like your brand strength equally important? We're talking about this and more on today's show, so stay with us. Welcome to another episode of OrthoThrive. I'm your host, Richie Gerzon. Today we have Dr. Mike Carroll joining us. Mike has practiced in clinical dentistry for over 26 years and currently serves as a dental practice broker and consultant at U.S. Dental Practices. Mike, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So just, Mike, can you just tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are today with and just a little bit about U.S. Dental Practices?
Well, I was practicing, as you'd mentioned, for 26 years. Yeah. And unfortunately, began to have some significant back, neck problems. My right hand is partially numb.
Yeah.
So I realized at that point that I was going to have to engage in a practice transition. And luckily, the fellows that helped me to sell my practice hired me as a dental practice broker to work alongside them. And I've been at that now for 8 years.
8 years. Well, that's a good transition for sure. You never know the silver lining of something like that.
That's true. That's true. I was fortunate to be able to be in that position. And I really enjoy what I do. And with our company, U.S. Dental Practices, we have a number of retired dentists who work with us throughout the country. And we are able to provide, how shall I put this? We know how the sausage gets made. I guess that's what I would say. In the sense that, you know, if you have somebody that comes out and is just a, you know, has a business degree or whatever, they don't know the ins and outs of doing dentistry, which we do. So that gives us a distinct advantage. When we meet with doctors, we often don't initiate the conversation by talking about they're selling their practices or what they're going to do. We talk about perhaps a new piece of equipment that they've gotten or how things are going with their patient flow or issues that they may be having in terms of taking impressions or things like that that are clinically related. So by virtue of that, we're able to establish a nice bond with the doctors and then eventually get on to the reasons that they would want to transition out of their practice or what their overall plan is.
So what kind of services do you offer to potential doctors who are wanting to buy or sell their practice?
Well, we do, we believe in a very comprehensive evaluation. So that's something that we engage in. Our evaluation of any given practice consists of a number of different aspects, including an item by an item assessment of the value of the equipment that they have, along with the their productions, their collections, their overall expenses. So that's one part of what we really do that's key to determining what the value might be on a given practice. Second of all, we have a situation where we help the doctors to sell their practice in the sense of arranging financing for potential buyers, and also helping them with legal representation, hooking them up with attorneys who are very experienced in doing dental practice transitions. And also we do consultation. We'll come in and give an evaluation. It's not a sophisticated program, but we can take a look at what might be going on in the office, problems that might be going on with staffing, situations that might be limiting the doctors and what they could produce, especially if they're moving towards a transition. Because one of the things that we try to strive is that doctors should not be taking their foot off the gas, even in the face of them trying to make a transition. You want to keep your numbers going, moving forward, because the banks are going to have to fund this transition. If they see that there's a decrease in revenue, that sends up a lot of red flags. Now, sometimes that is the case for a variety of reasons, but we want to try to limit that as much as possible.
So what are generally the main reasons someone is wanting to sell their practice? Just the obvious retirement, or there's some other reasons?
There's a myriad of reasons. One reason would be obviously health, overriding health issues, where they're not able to, you know, continue practicing. That's what it was for me. That's what it has been for several members of our team. Also, you know, you get to a certain age and dentistry becomes more of a challenge. It's really sort of a young person's game, I would say. It's difficult to, you know, keep performing surgeries and doing sophisticated procedures, you know, at a certain age. I think it's much more of a challenge. So I do think you reach a certain point where you have decided that patients might be better served by a younger person. So those are two. The third one is dealing with staff. That is one of the major things we find to be an issue with many of the dentists that we speak with. The dentistry is not really the issue. It's managing the front desk, managing the hygiene, managing the assistants, dealing with all of that. Now the COVID situation has caused some real problems with that, especially in dealing with the hygiene community. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people that are doing hygiene decided that they would prefer not to be in the office, that it's a high risk. They're afraid to spread virus to their families. And so that's created a situation like that. And in addition, sometimes we'll have circumstances. Nothing really is cradle to grave anymore. And I'm a perfect example of that. So people might just get to a point where they've burnt out. They just don't want to do it. They prefer to do something else, or they have enough money to retire and just want to do that. So there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Does doctors ever sell the practice but stay on as an employee? Do you see that very often?
That happens. That usually happens more when we deal with dental service organizations where they want to keep somebody on in the face of them purchasing the practice. And in that case, it often works out very favorably because they take over the dental management aspects. So they relieve the doctor of that responsibility. And so the person is lending their name, lending their skills, but not having to deal with the management issues that come up.
That makes sense. So what are some of the main reasons people want to buy a practice, a doctor's ready to buy one?
Well, I would say the number one reason, and this is where we get most of our buyers from, they've graduated from school, they've completed a residency. Let's say like in New York State now, you have to do a one-year dental residency somewhere. And then where do they go out to work? Well, many of them go out to work with these large dental service groups like Aspen Dental or Midwest or some of the Heartland, some of these companies. And unfortunately, many of these companies promise the world to the young doctors, but they're also creating a situation where they are on a numbers and production schedule, which sometimes is not in direct concert with what is best in the clinical aspect. So maybe they've done that for a few years. They get tired of that. They realize they now have the skill set to go out and run their own business. And that's what they do.
Wow. So if someone wants to increase the value of the practice, or what do you recommend they do? They're kind of thinking potentially about selling or bringing on a partner or something.
Well, are we talking about orthodontics? Or are we talking about general practice or both? Or
both, I suppose. I mean, either one is.
Okay. Well, I mean, overarching, if you have enough volume to add an associate, then that would certainly be a way that might provide the ability to generate additional dentistry, be it orthodontics or be it, you know, any aspect of dentistry. One of the things that we do consult doctors on is there something else you can add to your armamentarium that will help sell cases in your office? So for example, when Invisalign first got started, it was marketed to general dentists as something that they could add on. Now, many orthodontists are doing Invisalign. So you have that, let's say, as an add-on to increase the volume of your practice. In general dentistry, we might talk about doing conscious sedation. We might talk about the ability to add additional skills if you're comfortable with that, if you feel that you can manage implant placement. That would be a way to increase your production. So those would be some of the things that we could talk about. One thing we try to stress is that, and this happens more often than it really should, is that doctors, orthodontists get to a certain point and they figure, well, my kids are out of college. I paid off the tuition. My mortgage is paid off. So now it's time for me to ease up. Well, that might be okay. But unfortunately, what happens is it creates a situation of declining revenue.
Yeah,
so if you're going to ease up, if you're going to spend more time on the golf course, on your boat, traveling or doing something, you've got to have a mechanism to offset that. Like I mentioned, being adding an associate.
Seems like the obvious lever to pull, just add another associate. Yeah, right.
It's not that easy in this day and age because a lot of the associates, it's difficult to come by and not as easy as it should be. So what we try to say is really one of the main things that we talk about, at least I talk about to clients, is you should have a 10-year plan for what you're going to do. Almost all doctors make a plan to get in. Hardly anybody makes a plan to get out. And I'm often amazed by what I hear when I say, okay, so what's the plan? And I get sort of a dumb stare where they may not have even considered it. I mean, do you want to work another 10 years, 5 years, 2 years? Can you afford to retire now? Do you have to keep working? What are the issues at hand? So what you want to try to do is to establish a plan mentally and maybe even physically of what you can do and what you would like to do and where do you see yourself? You know, when you go for a job interview, they often will ask you, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? It's a very similar issue here. Where do you see yourself and what are you doing within the scope of your practice to achieve that end?
Do you ever find that a doctor decides to kind of go through a rebrand, new website, new marketing campaign, like just create lead generation mechanisms to just increase patient volume and it works? Does that increase valuation when someone, a bank, is looking at it? Well, they took these actions. We saw this result. The value of the practice is higher. Are they ever connected?
I would say they are. I mean, you have to think about who your market is that you're going to be selling to. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be selling to a young doctor who's probably technologically savvy. And those things may not have as much appeal to you as the seller, but they will have appeal to the potential buyer. We do almost all of our transitions with buyers who are getting information online. It's no longer a situation for the most part where they go looking in a dental journal or something like that, which used to be the case even as recently as 25 years ago. Now it's totally different. So I would say, yes, that is true.
So if you have if you're looking for an associate and you have really poor Google reviews and almost no social media presence, that's probably really going to hurt that.
Yeah, I think it would.
Because they're going to be looking at your practice and think there's something going on or something wrong. Why does it look like it's not alive and busy?
Well, that's true. And of course, every affiliation, you don't know what the terminus of that will be. So if I start working for you, perhaps we're having conversations where we would discuss perhaps a partnership or a transitional buyout, something like that. And if I'm looking at what you're doing, if your equipment and everything is tremendously dated, if there's no attention being paid to the office and how it looks, if you're not engaging in some advertising budget to try to make your presence unique and try to obtain new patients, then it's problematic. Plus, as an associate, you're generally going to get the new patients. So if there's no mechanism in place to get new people, what are you going to be doing? How are you going to carve out a living?
Yeah, I'd say if I was the buyer, I would only buy something like that if I was getting a really good deal. And you're basically buying the patient list and you're going to have to start from scratch, more or less. Sure. So if you're willing to climb that hill, you definitely should get a good deal, which means you're going to get less if you're the seller.
Right. And you don't know who you're competing with. I mean, at one point in my career, I was working in building on Park Avenue, and half of the offices in the building were dentists.
Really?
So I'm competing with somebody who's one floor above me.
Yeah, literally.
What's gonna distinguish me from them? Yeah. You know?
Oh, wow. So all this is overall, this just kind of is the brand perception, the perception of the practice, whether online or in person, it's all kind of affecting valuation. That's very interesting.
Exactly.
So obviously the database of existing active patients is valuable. What about a database of a lot of non-patients, pending patients, people that didn't quite, they don't have a contract, but they're in the system and they could be turned into a patient if they were nurtured properly? Does it have any value when you're looking at a practice and evaluating it?
I think it does have value. I mean, we advise doctors that they should be culling their records routinely.
Yeah.
And the major source of patients really comes from people who are seeking dentistry actively. So if you have active dental records, I mean, roughly now, I think the latest estimate is that somewhere around 50% or maybe a little more of the population never seeks the dentist, except for an emergency situation. And that's not really a patient. That's a fire that you have to put out. Hmm. So if you have motivated patients within your base who have a proven track record of having come to the dentist, then that certainly creates an opportunity for you to reactivate them. When I started, that was one of the campaigns that I was engaged in. I said, well, just give me the records and let me reach out to these folks. And, you know, even if you get and one out of every 10, that's one person that you would not normally have had. And not Absolutely. Only that, I think it almost serves as a practice analysis, because you'll get answers about what may not have gone properly. You know, I didn't like the fact that the doctor had too much cologne. I mean, it does, you know, whatever it might be, you get answers to what might happen. And it's also a way to help to strengthen the practice and increase on its positives and decrease on the potential negatives.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, you could even potentially send out a survey and gather a lot of that information. It's yep. never going to be as good as calling.
Right.
And, it's a lot of work, but that's a great idea. So let's talk a little bit about COVID. Did it impact buying and selling of practices? If so, how did it?
I think it did to some degree. I think it may have slowed down. The transitions we get involved in take real time. So we had things in the pipeline that we were working on even right through the circumstances. If I was to sum it up, I would say that the offices that were doing well continued to do well. They may not have done as well,
yeah.
but they did well. And the ones who were struggling, I think, struggled more. And what we've seen overall, though, is that the ones that may have been down a little bit have made back the dough that they lost in 2021. So they now, many of them are having trouble keeping up, as I mentioned, in the face of the hygiene situation.
Yeah.
They're scheduling hygiene patients perhaps out by 2, 3, 4 months, where that didn't was not necessarily the case. Same thing in ortho. Perhaps moms and dads a little skittish about bringing junior in for a orthodontic consult and to get cases initiated. Now those have rebounded over and above.
That makes sense. Interesting. Yeah, it just shows you have to have a lot of methods to get new patients in the pipeline. You can't just be referring probably on just referrals, for instance, or something like that. Because when some sort of hard time comes and you don't have any lever to pull, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, I think you have to fit your community. I think it depends on where you practice. The way you would market in New York City, let's say on Park Avenue, would certainly be different than the way you might market in Danbury.
Yeah.
So you have to, I think you have to be attuned to where you are, what's going on, what's happening. At one point, with the last practice I had, we had a very high contingent of senior citizen patients. Hmm. And they were great patients because they always paid their bills. They could come in the middle of the day for their appointments. But you had to be a little more simpatico to their needs. You had to be able to have a little time for chit chat, let them show you their pictures of their grandkids or whatever it is. Yeah. Whereas, you know, when I worked on Park Avenue in New York City, we had a lot of type A people. You know, let's get down to it. Boom. How long is this going to take?
I can absolutely see that. Having lived up there, I see exactly what you're saying.
You're dealing with, and you have to react accordingly.
That makes sense. So in general, how does U.S. dental practices assess how much a practice is worth? Do you have a certain method you use?
We do. We use a couple of different formulas, including valuation of the existing equipment, but it's based on, we have some proprietary things that we use in the evaluation.
Yeah.
But it's based on, it's really based on the production of the office and the overhead of the office. How much is being spent? There's an old saying, it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep.
Yes.
So we have offices that could be doing $2 million, but their overhead may be at 90%. Whereas you'll have an office that's doing $1.5 million and their overhead might be 60%.
Really? So, I mean, that's so a drastic difference.
The one at 60 is, yes, has more value when you think about it than the one at 2 million, unless somebody can come in there and really bring, you know, a big hammer. But that's not easy to do in the beginning. You can't just fire the entire staff and say, see you later. You need those people to get you going. And often what happens is, and it's the case with the practice I'm looking at now, the front desk staff, in my estimation, is completely overpaid. But the doctor tells me, you know, these folks are linked to many of our patients. If we fire this person, 50 people are going to walk out the door. So these are things that you have to really be aware of. So I guess what I'm saying is, in terms of the evaluation, the formulaic aspect of it is important, but we also have subjective input. You know, to us, even if two offices are making the same or producing the same with the same overhead, if one of them looks like a real dump and the other one is more aligned towards a modern look, we would certainly adjust our evaluation to reflect that.
That makes sense. All right. So tell me how U.S. dental practices differs from other brokers in the industry.
Well, for one thing, we strive to have personalized contact with someone. We will never sell a practice over the phone, which unfortunately happens. We will never sell a practice if we don't go to see the practice. So I've sold practices from Maine, and we're working on some in Florida. So all the way up and down the coast. But I go to see those practices at least once.
Yeah,
I will see what they look like, where they're located, what's happening. So that's one thing.
How could you make an accurate evaluation without doing that?
You would be amazed. You would be amazed.
Google Street only shows you so much or whatever.
Well, that's it. Look on Google Maps and think you have all the answers, but you don't get the timbre of what goes on. So that's number one. Number two, we do not charge the buyers any fee. Most of the brokerage firms are charging both the seller and the buyer.
Yeah.
And we don't feel that's really a genuine aspect, because I'm not sure how that really is supposed to work. So if you're paying me 10% commission and I'm getting 3% or 5% from the buyer, does that mean I speak with you for 10 minutes and then I get on the phone with them for 3 minutes? I'm not exactly sure how that relationship would work. And certainly, if you thought about it in terms of legal representation, no person would ever, you know, have one attorney work on both sides. And that happens, too, in our field. They have a generalized attorney who works on a deal. That's just disingenuous to me. You've got to have your own representation.
Yeah, same thing in selling a house, dual agency. You generally don't want to be doing that, right?
Most of the time, that's never going to happen. So that's the second aspect. Third aspect is, as I mentioned previously, having done dentistry, having been in the mix, we come at it from a very sophisticated location where we say, yeah, we have been where you are. And if you have a firm that just has, let's say, financial people, they've never been there. They don't understand the issues. They don't understand the problems.
Yes.
They don't get a straight answer. And we sometimes fall into a psychological aspect, in the sense that there are things that a doctor might tell us confidentially that they might not tell their own spouse. So that we Wow. We strive on confidentiality and what happens, but we will get to that because they realize that we can relate to it directly. So that's important. So that's another aspect of how we operate. And the other thing is we strive to be very honest and upfront. We don't have secret charges, hidden things. And oh, by the way, you've got to pay us for this or that. Our evaluations that we do, we charge $1,500 for those, but we will subtract those evaluations off of our final commission. So if you worked with us and we sold your practice and you paid us the $1,500 up front, we would take that $1,500 off the back. Essence, you would get a free evaluation. You just don't get it right away.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we only do an evaluation. You might have a divorce settlement and all we do is an evaluation in that case. Or we might have somebody who's really so undecided that for us to do our work, we need to get paid. And then we offer the same thing. The other thing is that we will update and adjust our evaluation for 5 years at no additional cost. So if you get the evaluation done today and you want to sell your practice 4.5 years from now, we'll come in, we'll update your numbers.
Oh, that's really nice.
We'll give that to you and then we'll go from there. So we strive to be fair, honest, and upfront in everything we do. That's a big thing to us.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's so important for a business. Do people ever get evaluation if they're just expanding? They want to open another office? Is that a moment?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
That's good. That's always fun.
I'm sorry. I was just going to add one thing because we were just discussing it today. We have a number of orthodontic offices that sell person to person. It would seem that general dental offices should be the ones selling more that way, but that's not true. It's really common for us to have an orthodontic practice sell from one doctor who's retiring to another doctor who wants to buy it and take over.
Yeah.
So those happen a lot. We deal a lot in orthodontic transitions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because that's definitely a moment you want to definitely have your finger on the pulse of what the value of your practice is.
Yep.
So if someone's interested in talking to you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
We have a website, usdentalpracticeswithans.com. All of our brokers are listed there with their geographic information. I can be reached at Dr. Mike at usdentalpracticeswithans.com. That's a good way to reach me via email. And if you contact me that way, my signature has all my other information on it, phone numbers, et cetera, that can be reached. Okay. But either through the website or directly through the email at drmike@usdentalpracticeswithans.com.
Is there anything else you want to cover before we wrap it up?
Well, I guess the take-home messages that I would like to leave is, number one, have a plan. Have at least a 5-year plan. And if you can have a 10-year plan for what you're going to do, that's critical.
Yeah.
Start thinking as you approach the age, what's my exit strategy going to be and how am I going to get out of this? And the other aspect of that is, what do I need to do to get my office up to snuff in terms of where we are in 2021? As we had been discussing previously, do I need to update my website? Do I need to engage more perhaps in Google clicks or something like that to bring me up to a more modern presence? Do I need new carpeting? Do I need new wallpaper? Do I need a new computer system? Do I need to have maybe the way in which my chairs and the things I'm working with need to be updated? So if you have an expansive plan, every year you could address some aspect of that. And by the time that 10 years, let's say, rolls on, you're ready to deliver. You're prepared to deliver for sale your practice.
Absolutely.
That's one of the things I see all the time. We'll see a guy who's really into cars, let's say, and he's like, well, I just spent, $25,000 to modernize my 65 Jaguar that I had. I put money here, put money there. And then you go into the office and it looks awful. So the place that's generating the income to do those things is not keeping pace with what it's being spent on. So that's one. The second thing is, don't mentally retire before you physically retire. And what I mean by that is, if you're deciding that you want to do something, you've got to keep your pedal to the metal until such time as documents are signed and you are physically out the door, or you've signed the documents for you to remain on, or whatever it's going to be. Because once we mentally leave, our physical production will absolutely go down. And we see that aspect of it too. So you've got to stay the course until there is a transition. Third thing is, even if you're thinking about it, just call us. We're happy to talk to you. If someone wants to meet for a coffee, they're not sure, they want some advice, they want some input, we're happy. We're not attorneys. We're not going to charge by the minute. So we'll meet with you. We'll sit down. We'll be able to give you our expertise, having done it. I bought and sold several dental practices over my career. So we're happy to just have a chat and engage in questions and whatever you need to do. We're open to that always. So those would be the things I think are most important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's some great advice. Keep the pedal to the metal. Right to the end. I think that's good advice no matter what you're doing.
It is true.
All right, Dr. Mike, thanks for being on the show. I was really good. I learned a lot.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It was my pleasure.
You're welcome. Dr. Carroll really said something that stuck with me in this interview. Don't let your foot off the gas no matter where you are in your journey with the practice, because when you're ready for that valuation time, you want to make that transition. If you're complacent for the last few years, you're not really going to get the number that you want. You want your valuation to be as high as possible, so you got to keep grinding all the way into the end, right? So if you want to be a guest on the show, or you know of a great person you think should be a guest, just go to orthothrive.com. You can reach me at richard@orthosalesengine.com. Keep grinding, keep thriving, and I'll see you next time.